So what do you think? Lively or gloomy? Lively? Anybody think it was a lively song? Gloomy? Anybody think it was a gloomy song? Okay. I picked that because a number of years ago, I was in Texas doing an interim there. And the song eventually started coming back to me because it's always been a favorite, along with other REM songs. And the part particularly about, it's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine. Fine? Really? So this morning I'm going to talk about apocalypse, one of our favorite topics in this country. Now, when I was in Texas and I was asked to do a service on stewardship, I kept thinking, well, what am I going to say? What am I going to title? Because titles are always the hardest part for a minister to do on a topic, because you want to leave plenty of elbow room just in case you want to change something. So I kept thinking about it and thinking about it. And do you know how your intuition sometimes will keep nudging you about something? Like for me, for example, it could be, did I lock the door in my house? Or did I feed my cat second breakfast? Things like that. Something my intuition is saying, Alex, pay attention. And I wasn't quite sure back in Texas and then later on in Seattle and here what my intuition was telling me, because there was a very simple sentence, three words. This is it. And I had no idea what that meant. It felt like a storm on the horizon or a warning of some sort. And I have a good imagination, sometimes too good. But I thought, well, maybe I'm reading too many post-apocalyptic books, because they've been popular in this country and abroad since the 1940s. Or maybe I was playing Fallout 76 too much. Who knows of Fallout 76 here? Great. Do you, Bridget? You don't? Oh, my goodness. Well, Fallout 76 is a post-apocalyptic game. It's an online game based after a nuclear war in West Virginia. And it's quite exciting. I enjoy it immensely, and it's my one remaining addiction. So anyway, I thought, well, maybe something is happening I don't know about, which wouldn't be the first time. And then I realized how popular apocalyptic literature and music was, not only in this country, but around the world. And some of the themes that you can bump into these days are some famous ones, like the zombie apocalypse. How could anyone forget that? A secret lab someplace, the United States, China, somewhere, a virus gets out of control and escapes, and everybody is turned into zombies because you get bitten, and then it's all over, and it gets very exciting. And if any of you remember Dawn of the Living Dead, that was actually one of the first zombie movies. And then another important one, of course, is the asteroid hitting the Earth apocalypse, where a variation is a comet splits up, and for some reason, nobody sees it until the last minute, and then all the shreds of the comet hit the planet, and civilization is destroyed, and a few survivors try to carry on and learn from humanity's flaws until the next time. And then, of course, there's the ever-popular nuclear apocalypse, and that has come back into vogue recently thanks to the Ukraine-Russian war. That was very popular with us since the 1940s, and even though I didn't go to school in the 50s and early 60s, did any of you do the duck and cover routine? Yeah, apparently this was an exercise where if you ducked and you got under your desk at school, you might survive a nuclear explosion, I guess. Right, okay. And then, of course, the traditional one, the Christian version of apocalypse with the four horsemen, pestilence, war, famine, and death. And that's another reason why you have to look at the Good Omens movie, because it has a hilarious take on it. But let's suppose something different just for today. The original Greek meaning of apocalypse means to reveal or uncover. It doesn't necessarily mean, boom, Something happens, the earth comes to an end, there's a nuclear war, whatever. It means that something gets uncovered or revealed, aka the book of Revelations, by the way. Rebecca Parker is a Unitarian Universalist and Methodist minister, and she's been with this denomination for many years now. She was the president of Star King School for the Ministry. And she's written a number of books on history and liberal religion. And one of the essays that she wrote was After the Apocalypse. And she proposes a very radical idea, because we are somewhat accustomed and conditioned to think the apocalypse, who's going to win in 2024, whatever, is right around the corner. And we better get ready and better be scared. She says, what if it's already happened? What if whatever was going to happen, it's just blown things up, revealed things, has already happened, and now we are living in the aftermath? She asks later, what if our job is to gather up the tools, that old world that's gone now, before the apocalypse, and use them in new ways, if they're still useful? As an example, she suggested one particular apocalypse, which I think is probably true, the 60s, that uncovered the spiritual illnesses of the world, including how caught up in old ways of life that didn't work anymore. But it was also spiritual in nature. Now I'm going to give you an example. Do any of you remember the picture Earthrise? It's a very powerful picture because it was the first human-taken picture of when the Apollo spacecraft was orbiting the moon, and they weren't landing, that was later. And they were orbiting the moon on their second or third orbit, and they had been doing all the things astronauts do, and they hadn't looked out their windows, and then all of a sudden, one of them says, oh my goodness, look at that. And the Earth was rising from the horizon of the moon. And of course, being good astronauts and tourists, they took a lot of pictures. But the one that has endured in our collective memories since then was that small orb about the size of a marble that was rising over the bleakness of the moon. That became probably the most powerful and influential environmental picture of the 20th century. It gave us a sense of this is all it is. This is it. One of the astronauts said, I could cover the Earth with my thumbnail. And that was it. It was very powerful. And it was one of the reasons that the first Earth Day occurred in 1970. So that could be a revelation from apocalypse that continues on and on and on. Now, even though the 60s were nearly a half century ago, and I know deeply criticized by some, the consequences of that era still ripple through the world. The era is admittedly seen by some people as a time of total excess and defiant authority and depravity. Whatever. And others saw it as a breaking down of old social, religious, and political traditions that no longer were terribly useful in the world that is now. So the mindset of the 60s still is all around us. You talked about it today, really, around Pride Month. And give a sense, those of you who were living in the 60s and before, and I'll not point any fingers, imagine what it was like for people along the gender spectrum. You talked about it this morning. I would argue that along with the civil rights movement, the 60s brought that out of the shadows for equal rights, equity of marriage, and so on. It was a powerful impetus to change, saying this can no longer be endured. It is not right or just that people cannot love who they love and that people have to hide their sexuality in a closet. And all of that, along with same-sex marriage and equal rights, not just for gays and lesbians, but also in the trans community and beyond, to us here would probably say, well, of course, but it's a work in progress. And it's one of the outcomes of that apocalypse of the 60s. The American racial reckoning continues to unfold painfully and desperately. That's another example of what came out of that era. The knee-jerk fear of drugs, especially cannabis, is slowly being replaced by cautious acceptance. Organic foods and the locavore movement make us more aware of what are we eating and what does it have in it and how do we correct it. And then, of course, the climate crisis, probably the biggest of them all. At that time, in, say, 1958 or 59, around the time that Rachel Carson wrote Silent Spring, it wasn't important. I lived on a farm in Maine. We sprayed everything with DDT and then ate it. That probably explains why I'm the way I am. But the thing is, we learned. It was uncovered that we were not caring not only for ourselves and our fellow human beings, but for the planet itself. The list of changes from the apocalypse of the 60s is endless and continues, because we can't forget 9/11, and we certainly can't forget the pandemic. So Rebecca Parker tells us in that essay that one of the responsibilities of a liberal religious community in the apocalyptic age, not time, but age, is to decide what tools still work from the old days and what don't. Well, here's the neat part. I'm thinking of Meadville, but I'm also thinking particularly of this religious community. What tools from the old world are suitable and they are using in new ways? Well, I don't have to look very far. I'm not going to put down all of them because there are quite a few. But here are some of them. Many religious communities have fallow times when energy is at a low point and the future seems a bit uncertain. And I suspected several years ago before I came here, that this congregation was in a fallow time, a time of respite. And I think since Carmen Emerson left, she was full-time minister, I think you've been in a little bit of that stage, and it's perfectly appropriate. That's a time when a religious community takes a rest, doesn't worry too much, and then rebuilds. And I've seen it in many places besides here. But now, what you're doing and have been doing for the last several years is that you have awakened again into what seems like a new and strange world where the old rules no longer really fit anymore. So you've been discerning what tools can we work with and what are no longer useful. So here's some of the things that I've noted. Many religious communities shut down during the pandemic, and they never made it back. A lot of religious communities closed, and they never reopened. You did. You survived the apocalyptic event, but you didn't stop there. Thanks to Joshua and Ian and the students at Allegheny College, you installed the solar panels on the parish house roof, and they started generating electricity this last week. And if you look in the B&B, which is our weekly newsletter, there's a link you can press, and you'll find out how much electricity is being generated. How cool is that? That's a huge step into the 21st century. As far as I know, you were the first church in this area to do so. And you know what? Now you have bragging rights for a while. I believe your most important demographic has transitioned in recent years. My guess, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, is that historically your primary church population has been associated with Allegheny College. Many Unitarian fellowships and churches tend to attract highly educated and upper-class people, especially in university communities. And I'll also note in New England, where Unitarians are seen as Episcopalians without the incense. In other words, kind of upper crust. And it can feel sometimes like a club where outsiders stay at the outside. It's very awkward sometimes. You now have a wide range of people, from those who didn't attend college at all to those who have PhDs. Your socioeconomic spectrum here is very wide. And the wonderful thing that is happening with you is that you are welcoming everyone equally. And I think of Rich and Corinne, who always greet newcomers. And it's just wonderful, because I'm a wallflower, by the way. I stand up against the wall at coffee hour and just watch everybody and the energy and the new people. It's really exciting. And you welcome everybody, and they're your future. They're not your past. Once again, you have adapted to a new world. And thanks to Deb and Mark and others, you started Children's RE program again after 3 years. And then you had the bequest that Rick mentioned a little bit earlier, to make the repairs and upgrades to the parish house, and most likely in this building as well. You haven't let the fear of scarcity hold you back, because you knew at some level, like I did, this is it. This is it. And you responded with care and love and courage. You want another example? Because we got a couple more minutes. In the spring of 2020, we were faced with an empty sanctuary and an urgent desire to continue services virtually. Thanks to your board, along with Amy and her associate, Kirsten, you put together weekly Sunday Zoom services, and Mark and Bill and Amy and others have expanded the online abilities and the sound and video so that these can actually be televised, so that people who cannot be here can watch and experience. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. Do you think that you would have done all that work to bring in new people, new equipment, and so on, if the pandemic had never happened? I wonder if you would still be arguing about it. And that's okay, because an awful lot of churches or religious communities wouldn't have done it either. It would, we'll put it off a little bit longer, and sooner or later we'll get around to it. But here you did not have a real choice, because if you were going to do more than survive, you were going to have to adapt. And that's exactly what you have done. You've been telling the world in your own quiet way that there's no one right religion and all the others are wrong. And this is what I would say is this apocalyptic age, the 60s and beyond, have pushed us into a time where we can really begin to say, it has been the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine, because we know what to do. We know how to face the unknowns, and most of all, you're in it together. New people, veteran people, doesn't matter. You're in it together, and you will not only survive, but you will prosper, and I think you'll even have fun. Thank you.